Welcome back to Extra Innings with Bill Lasky on KNBR, the sports leader. I'm really excited to bring in my guest today. He was a World Series champion in 2004 with the Boston Red Sox. He started his career with the San Francisco Giants. So many accolades. He was a Silver Slugger Award, American League batting champ in 2003 with a .326 batting average. Let's welcome in Bill Miller today. How are you doing today, Bill?
Great, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining me today. You're currently an Arizona State University hitting coach. You're out of the Major League Baseball. What made you make that change?
I think it's just a great opportunity to touch all different levels and, just stay being a teacher's first and foremost what I love. And it's kind of like doesn't really matter the title as long as I get to help kids and help with solutions and work through problems and, help upgrade people as, as far as themselves, as far as individuals and as well as, them as a baseball player. So,
well, Bill, you had a great 11. Yeah, you had a great 11-year Major League Baseball career. Of course, you started out with the Giants. You moved over to the Cubs, the Red Sox, and final out with the Dodgers. But you also went into the front office, and you were also a hitting coach with all three, the Dodgers, Cubs, and Cardinals. What did you learn after the game that made you successful in all these titles?
I would say bottom line is, when you get done playing – you kind of are trying to navigate to find what's going to kind of equal or kind of stimulate as you as much as the game did. And that's pretty difficult. And I think through going through this whole process of being outside the game and working in many different categories as far as front office and hitting coach and player development and scouting, and it just helped center myself to what really matters to me and what stimulates me to help people. And bottom line is I just never my motto is like you never arrive, so I never stopped being a student of the game. And I think wanting to be the best teacher possible for the game of baseball in whatever capacity, I was helping out at a high school before I took on this job. It's just, I think the essence of helping and solving in a capacity to break it down to an elementary form to be able to teach at any level and just be the best kind of professor I can be for people, not only, again, for the individual, but for the game of baseball. So probably what I learned about, the long answer, but just learning more about myself to be a better teacher and be a better person and better human being for other people.
Well, one of the things that Giant fans remember, and I do too, you were a very good switch hitter. Batting from the right side, you ended up your career with a .294 batting average. From the left side, .282. How hard was it to balance both sides of the batter's box coming into a game, switch hitting, and understanding different swing paths from both sides? Tell us a little bit how you learned how to switch hit, and at the same time, how you were so balanced in both sides.
Well, it was Dad in the backyard growing up in St. Louis. The Cardinals had a ton of switch hitters at the time, and obviously I wasn't going to be a very big guy. And just to add a little bit more fun to the game, so, he turned me around and did it for the longest time before I got into like one of those little league games or something and just took off with it. And, it's pretty much probably propelled myself, my career, because of, the ability to stay in lineups and not get platooned as much and stay in there the entire game and not be pulled out like in the ninth or in any situation. So, but as far as how do I manage both, I tried to mimic that both sides stay the same so that it wasn't that difficult to switch in the middle of a game or against a tough righty or lefty in the, like in the eighth inning or closing out a game, because that would just be too tough to manage if there were two different swings. So I tried to keep it the same on both sides and had the same pillars in place, so that I knew that I could tie my confidence into one word at one time and help my chain of command and be able to perform.
Forever Giant Bill Miller joining me on Extra Innings. Let's start right where you started, Maryland Heights, Missouri. That's where you grew up at. Was there a player, like you said, from the Cardinals? Was there someone that you watched all the time? Was there a hero? Was there a idol that you were looking at in when you were growing up in Missouri?
Well, Pops always used to say, take bits and pieces from everybody. So, it was maybe the eye of Ryan Sandberg, or the ability to hit pitches off the plate from Willie McGee, or it was the ability to steal bases from Vince Coleman, or, whatever it is. But I would say the one guy that I admired a little bit the most from that team was Willie, because, his humbleness and his ability to be a professional and go out there and command and be successful in big situations and have big at-bats and still just never really drink the Kool-Aid and just go out there every day and perform. And fortunately, when I was with the Giants in the minor leagues and, I was with San Jose, we'd go to a Giant game every now and again on our day off, and I got to meet him once. And that was pretty awesome. And then working with the Cardinals, I got to work with him for a full year when I was working in the big leagues with the Cardinals. So it was a thrill, and he's still the same guy and still exactly what I thought he was, and actually even better just because getting to know him and knowing his true character and everything. So that was a thrill. Willie McGee's really inspirational to me.
And he was a tough out, as you said, in those Cardinal days with Vince Coleman, Tommy Herr, Willie McGee. They used to pound that ball in the turf and go right by the bag. It was a difficult challenge with those teams back then, and a tough, tough out. And what a great guy. I've known him for many years. Willie McGee is just a class act. Well, you moved on to Desmet Jesuit High School, an all-boys school, a very good educational school, as well as in sports. 53 teams in 19 sports. They uniform every year. And, of course, the baseball side, they were two-time state champions in the year 2000 as well as 2019. Why did you go there, and did you play any other sports while you're there?
Well, it was an easy decision just because of college preparatory and getting myself right and understanding, learning about responsibility and things of that nature of, handling your schoolwork and also playing sports. And, like as a freshman, you play all three sports and understanding the workload and how to manage all that. So, it was great because the work capacity was so large, and entering my freshman year at Missouri State or Southwest Missouri at the time was a lot easier to transition into from the demand at the SMAT. So, but Greg Vitale really built that program as far as baseball and soccer over there, and just really gave us a platform to really grow. And it was a great decision for myself to be able to go there and play the best competition possible. And then later, as I left, my dad ended up going over there and coaching with Greg for 14 years and helping out and working with the program and all the kids. So that was pretty special to hear and be able to stay in touch with the program and follow some kids that, got to go play, college baseball and things like that. So, but great place. Still rocking it over there. They're still doing great and still have a great reputation for academics and sports.
Well, I tell you what, Bill, a good foundation, and it really built a product within you and just how you moved on in your life and all the education that they've treated you to and learning about. I mean, those are the high schools that really, really bring you back to where it all started. Well, from there, you went to Southwest Missouri State University. Now it's called Missouri State University. Was it a different, difficult, or even a different way of moving into the college game? Was it something that you were ready for? Was it something that you did when you got there and you said, hey, I can adjust to this. This is good baseball, because it was. And how did you proceed into it?
Well, you know, when I walked in there, I was it's probably the one aspect of that hurt my recruiting was my size. So I went in there undersized and had to really develop and understand myself. And that really helps going forward into my career is, you know, knowing what I bring to the game or to a lineup or to a manager or head coach. And understanding that from a small perspective as far as, you know, you got to work for everything that you get, I think helped catapult me to, you know, stay, you know, never really gravitate out of that category and just work at whatever I had to do. And that's what Missouri State did, you know, for me. I had to, you know, get stronger and be able, you know, upgrade my agility and upgrade my ability to, you know, hit as far as I was kind of a big bunter the very start of my career at Missouri State, and then how to establish myself as a hitter and then, you know, the command of playing defense and the demand of being able to, you know, have some leadership later in my career there. And you know, it was a big growing process from just being some kid that looked up to all these guys to finally my senior year being a piece that, you know, I really wanted to help and lead and you know, be in big situations to help a team. And that was just from Keith Gutton and all the coaches there that, again, allowing with the development and teaching and having the effort and you know, always being a part and worrying about your grades and kind of wrapping their arms around you and keeping you going forward. So, yeah, it was a big platform there to catapult me into the minor leagues and being drafted. And you know, those two spots, the Smet and Missouri State, big pillars in my life for development as a kid, you know, as a person and as a player.
Well, one of the other things, Bill, that you accomplished was in 1992 playing summer ball in the Cape Cod Baseball League for the Bourne Braves. I also played there. Many top players that made the big leagues ended up going through Cape Cod. It was a wood bat league, something new to you. What did you learn playing in Cape Cod? And boy, oh boy, it was really good talent there as you get to play against some of the great college players and also getting scouted because that's one heavily scouted summer league. What did you think about playing in Cape Cod, and how did you adjust playing with that wood bat?
Yeah, you know, all those summer leagues, as soon as you get to college, you want to get out and leave for the summer because, you know, you read Baseball America at the time. That was a big magazine and stuff, and you're trying to see, you know, you see all these guys hitting and the studs at ASU and Mississippi State and Texas, and so you're asking yourself, do I stack up? And do I measure up to that? Can I play with those guys? Can I compete? Can I be successful? And those different spots, you know, the Jayhawk League, the Cape Cod League, were stepping stones of finding out and kind of putting confidence in my back pocket that I could compete, that I could be successful, that I could go out there and handle myself the right way. And that's what Cape Cod did for me is I went out there and really had a great year, lost the batting title to Lou Maroney on pretty much the last day. You know, that's one thing I had at that time in my small little career. It was one thing I really had to prove to other people was could I hit with a wood bat because, you know, the metal bat was all I had played in prior to either summer, you know, at Missouri State and going up there and competing against the best kids in America and handling the wood bat the way I did, I think helped open some doors for myself and give me an opportunity to just get a call and go out and have some success there in the minor league. So, yeah, it was a big step. All those steps were big because I just kept stacking confidence, like I said, in both pockets and getting better.
Well, and it definitely helped because in 1993, you were drafted in the 15th round by the San Francisco Giants. What did you think at that time? Were you ready to go to pro ball? Were your parents ready to say it's time? What did you think at that time when they drafted you and you said, hey, it's time to put the SF on my chest and go for it?
It was one of the best days of my life, truly. I mean, what can you say? You work so damn hard and, you know, that's your goal. You know, all I ever wanted to be was a baseball player. So I get to keep doing it. I get another opportunity. And Todd Tiny Thomas, the guy that drafted me, kind of was lived there in St. Louis and had followed me for 4 years. And just finally, you know, we tricked the Giants to pick me up. And man, it was a special day for both of us, and obviously for my mom and dad. It was a super thrill. I wouldn't have wanted to gone anywhere else. You know, you don't know any different. But what a place San Francisco was, and having spring training at Scottsdale. It's like the penthouse of all spring trainings. So you know. What else could he say? But it was the perfect spot.
That voice you hear is Bill Miller. As we continue on, and with extra innings, of course, you got drafted, you signed, and man, oh man, you didn't take time out at all. 1993, you played in a low A ball in Everett. You batted 360 for 200 at bats, 8 doubles, 2 triples, 1 home run. Was it difficult to adjust now that you're in the minor leagues and you have steps and you're seeing all these different players that are competing against you? How did you feel in those first couple days and maybe the first couple weeks when you were in the minor leagues and now you're playing in Everett?
Well, Bill, I tell this story a lot, but I went to Omaha prior to the draft to a Yankee tryout camp because I didn't know if I was going to get drafted, right? So I hurt my elbow. And I call Todd, and I'm like, Todd, you know, I hurt my elbow. What should I do? What's my next step? Don't worry about it. Giants still draft me. I go to Everett, and I'm sitting because my elbow still hurt. And so I'm waiting, and there's like 4 guys in front of me, right? First guy breaks his thumb. Next guy, they move up to low A ball. Next guy breaks his jaw. Next guy tears his ACL, trying to take the catcher out at home plate, and then I get to play right when I got healthy, and then I never came out of the lineup. So, I will tell you this. Norm Sherry called me in the office at the end of the year and said, son, you had a really good year, and I was thinking, you know, average, because that's all I ever look at. And he was like, and I'm not talking about your average. He goes, what really impressed me and what I think will propel you if – you know, you can maintain this or you look at the game in a different perspective is that you had more walks than strikeouts for the year. And he goes, that really impressed me. And I'm proud of the season that you had. And so it gave me a new perspective of, you know, how people look and what kind of different details are seen by different people. And so that was really cool.
Well, I tell you what, Bill, the numbers just came off the table here when I started watching, looking up your minor league stats. The next year, in 94, you went to San Jose. You hit 302, 130 hits for 430, 20 doubles, 9 triples, 5 home runs, and you continued the following year in Shreveport. You batted 309, 14 doubles, 6 triples, 4 home runs, and you split that year. You got to go to Phoenix a little bit, and you hit 297, 13 doubles, 6 triples, 2 home runs. So the steps to get to the big leagues were definitely going further each year. How did you feel after the first couple of years, after you got through Everett and San Jose? Now you went to Shreveport, Double-A, and then you got a little taste of Triple-A. Was it different mindset as you got higher into the organization, or was it just more or less more concentration in refining some of your skills?
Yeah, like I said, you know, going through those steps, high school, college, of understanding who you are and what you bring and what you do, you just start wrapping your arms around that even more of just being a little bit better at that. And so I never came out of what I did best, and that was be unselfish and, you know, get on base. That year in San Jose, I walked 101 times. So You know, I just taking what they give you. You know, at the time, I think I let off at the time up there in San Jose, and just doing what's best for the team that night. You know, just trying. What can I do tonight to win the ball game? To help my team win the game. You know, so whether it was defense or, you know, getting a stolen base or what have you, it's what asset can I help the team? And that's just kind of what you just kind of fall in love with and do. And I wasn't trying to hit for more power or, you know, do anything selfishly as far as not moving the runner over or trying to hit that sac fly to drive the runner in. I just tried to, you know, focus on what was my best assets, and that was, you know, getting on base, moving the ball around, being unselfish, doing whatever it takes, and just tried to keep getting better at doing those types of things. So when that manager put me in the lineup, he knew what the hell he was getting every night, and I could be dependent upon. And so that's why it was a little bit easier to make each step and continue to have some success, because I always tried to put the team first and stop worrying about me so much and cut my anxiety down to put it on helping others and having the mindset that these guys are relying on you to pick them up. And that's just kind of what I did, and it just kept working and we kept winning, so it was good.
Well, in 1996, you split some time with Phoenix where you hit 302, but you ended up getting a call to the big leagues. You ended up playing 55 games with them. You had 200 at-bats, 66 hits. You hit 330. I mean, everything was going right. On April 18th, 1996, they called you to the big leagues. On the following day, you had your first Major League Baseball hit against Terry Adams. Tell Giants fans how all that happened, how the call came, and how did you feel when you got that call to the big leagues?
Man, it was tremendous because guys were kind of going up that year. You know, Richard really got the call to go to the big leagues, and, you know, I was always thinking, you know, standing after taking ground balls, shagging the outfield, what that would be like. And to get that call was a tremendous thrill. It was crazy. And again, I tried to educate people. You never know. Everybody thinks they have this scenario in their head, like what it's going to be like when you get called and what's going to go. You know, you're going to get called, you're going to take a nice flight, you're going to get there on time, and you're going to hit three in the order, and, you know, you're going to get, you know, four hits and two at bats and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, it's just not this scenario. You know, it's like this late night flight or this early morning 4 a.m. wake up call, and you get there late and you're rushing and you don't even get to take BP. And, you know, so, you know, for me, it was just coming off the bench, which, you know, in the minor leagues you play every day. If kind of you're kind of a piece for the organization, and you know, coming off the bench is something I never had done it in my entire life to pinch hit. So that was awkward in itself, but, you know, you embrace it, and, you know, having the ability that, you know, having that mindset that you're always there to help the team, I think helped with that because I didn't take it as a negative. I was just happy to get in there and help and maybe get on base and start a rally or whatever. And by golly, if I got my second at bat the next day, I got a knock, and man, it was great. Mark Grace was, he said, "Hey buddy, congratulations. That's one of 2000.
And,
I was like,
great.
"Hey, thanks, Mark. I've been watching you on TV my whole life, man." You know, like, it's pretty awesome. Because growing up in St. Louis, WGN was the cornerstone of having something on baseball wise. So pretty big thrill because my folks were up in the stands, and, you know, it's right super close to St. Louis. And man, Wrigley Field was immaculate, you know, for an old crusty place that, you know, had a big old shine on it because
still does.
History, dang, it does. So what a wonderful place.
Yeah, you know, Bill, in 1996, you were 25 years old. You walked into a clubhouse with Matt Williams, Robbie Thompson, Sean Dunstan, Richard Aurelia, you mentioned, Barry Bonds, Stan Javier, just a fascinating lineup and star-studded. How did you feel walking into that clubhouse, looking around, saying, hey, I'm one of these guys now?
Like I said, you never arrive, but I just kept my head down and in my locker. You know, I didn't say a word. You know, I just went out there, took BP, went back to my locker, waited for the game. Man, I wasn't saying anything. I was when I spoke, that was because someone spoke to me. So, yeah, but awesome individuals. I mean, great, great guys. I mean, Stan Javier, Kurt Manwaring, Matt Williams, Robbie Thompson took great care of me. You know, it was just a big group of you know, pros, and what else can you say? You know, those guys had good, great careers, and I was just happy to be around them and plug into them every day and watch them and learn from them by example, or learn from, you know, after the game, we going out and having a couple beers and talking about life. So, yeah, great, great pillars to have in front of you to kind of emulate and want to be like, when you, if you're fortunate to grow up kind of in that major league, atmosphere and be a piece to help with ball club. Basis.
Well, you know, Bill, in 1997, the team kind of took some changes. JT Snow was at first, Jeff Kent was at second, Viscaino was at short, and you were a pillar at third base. And again, Glenn Allen Hill shows up, Barry Bonds also. And the team kind of changes in a direction of more hitting, better defense. What'd you think of that change?
Man, it was awesome because, you know, we're picked last, I believe, that year in the division, and we come up and come from nowhere, and I'll never forget how that stadium was rocking, and Beck was on the mound, and we're playing against the Dodgers, and he struck out Eddie Murray, or maybe Eddie Murray hit a dribbler back to him or something, the bases loaded. Oh my God, that was unbelievable. Candlestick was going crazy, and man, it was just unbelievable. And then, you know, to win that and to get your first taste of the playoffs. And gosh, it's just like a damn drug because I just want to get back there and do it all over again and go further and be a part of something like that and be around those guys and grow that entire season of not, you know, listen to the outside noise of, you know, that we're not good enough. And you know, we just kept plugging and getting better, and credit to Dusty Baker and his staff and that whole group, Stan Conte keeping us healthy, and man, it was just just awesome that you know, it all worked together just so everybody could get a little shine on him because of you know, everybody works so damn hard, and it takes a village to do something. I think if that greatness of, you know, coming from dead last, picked in the division, to being first. So pretty cool.
Well, 6 years you spent with the San Francisco Giants and ended up in 2001 getting traded to the Cubs for Tim Laurel. Finally, after the Cubs, you ended up signing with the Boston Red Sox. And boy, second life at 32 years old, one of the best years of your career. 600 plate appearances, 171 hits. You hit .326 in 2003. You were the American League batting champ. 45 doubles, 19 home runs. And I guess Fenway Park, you kind of loved hitting there, huh?
Well, it was a special place because it was a perfect fit for my swing path. You know, I was a left center kind of guy, hitting left-handed, and those fly balls, those baby fly balls that I used to hit, were going off the wall. So that created a lot more doubles for me. And you know, right-handed, I was kind of more of a pull guy. So that helped. And I really upgraded my game as far as hitting the breaking ball right-handed wise off those lefties. So that helped. And, you know, I ran into Jeff Pentland with the Cubs, and he changed my career. Let me tell you, he changed my philosophy on hitting. And you know, I really didn't get to show it. I started to show it there with the Cubs. I was hitting third. Sammy was hitting four. I thought Don Baylor had lost his cotton picking mind. And one day I walked in there to see my name hitting three. And again, another great thrill because, you know, watching WGN and watching first baseman hit in front of Sammy for so many years, Mark Grace was, you know, it was just like, I can't believe I'm hitting three in a lineup. And I was doing, you know, I started doing really well. And then that's when I slid into that advertising sign and broke my kneecap and shattered that. And so that derailed my progress on really kind of showing off my new skills as far as what Pent was teaching, and adding 10 to 15 more feet on my ball and getting a little bit more backspin and not being such a spinner anymore and kind of hitting to my front side and using that torque to kind of elevate my game. And so it derailed me because I just didn't get, you know, healthy and really lost about 6 months of baseball there with the Cubs. And then I got healthy and went to Brett Fisher here in Arizona. And he got me right, and great facility, great place for rehab. And so then I end up signing with the Boston Red Sox, fully healthy and ready to kind of show it off of what I've been working so hard on and with. And boy, it really worked out, and it was a perfect storm there.
Well, Bill Miller, July 29, 2003, I know you remember that date. You were a switch hitter. You hit two grand slams on the left side and right side. You were the 12th player to hit two grand slams in the same game, but you were the only one to do it on consecutive at-bats. Do you remember the game? And I know you do, and I know you remember the grand slams. Tell us a little bit about that day.
Yeah. I will say that before the game, Fultzy was coming off the field. Aaron Foltz and Doug Mirabelli and I had played with Fultzy in the Giants organization, so we said hi to him, and Mirabelli was coming off the field and was like, hey, man, Fultzy, god dang it. He loved that 3-1 changeup. And I was like, yeah, you know, not thinking of anything. And then the other guy, Powell, who was pitching, I've been facing him since the Cape Cod League, never got a hit off that guy. And so, again, you know, change up, first at bat. Well, it wasn't my first at bat. My first at bat was against the knuckleballer that turned knuckleball, but at the time he was like fastball, slider, curveball guy. And always beat me in. And that first at bat, I was like, man, I'm going to leak. I am going to get this finally, because he's just been killing me in. So I leaked and got him. And then second at bat was a right-handed grand slam. And I sat on the changeup and got it. And the second grand slam, I was looking heater down because he was a big sinker guy and heavy ball. And it was a changeup that he kind of left up, and I caught it out front. And I just got lucky and carried out over the wall, and just super fortunate, man, that, you know, it just played out that way. And it's pretty cool, pretty awesome. The Rangers gave me a base, you know, they gave me third base. And so I still got that somewhere in the basement. But pretty crazy evening, man. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I tell you what, I watched it on YouTube. It was pretty cool. I watched both home runs, and just the memory of it, you know, watching you hit in a Red Sox uniform. It was just so cool. And you turned on 2003 into 2004, and boy, the Red Sox took off in 2004. They ended up being World Series champions. But on July 24, 2004, it seemed like that game, that at-bat you had, turned that season around for the Red Sox. And on that day, you had a walk-off home run versus the New York Yankees against Mariano Rivera. And the stats that you did against Mariano, 5-for-11 lifetime with a home run, you hit .455. And the Red Sox fans called you the Rivera Slayer. And I know you remember this. And that home run was something else, boy. And it really did turn around that season, because you guys went on a winning streak after that, and it changed the whole direction of that season. Tell us a little bit more about that 2004 World Series championship team.
Well, great group of guys. As you can tell, you have one there. Gabe Kapler is your manager, you know, Doc being the manager of the Dodgers, just quality individuals. Again, great men that, you know, embrace their role, were super talented, could be, you know, starting on different teams. And, you know, shoot, I joke around that I hit eighth and won a batting title. So, you know, we just were just about trying to help the team and do what it takes to win ball games and do something spectacular as far as, you know, try and win a World Series. So super talented group. and I think it showed that we're pretty unselfish and doing that. And, you know, Mariano's just, you know, just it was a team effort. We just competed and worked really hard on not saying that, you know, like we'd watch on TV, you know, Blue Jays would be playing and Yankees, and he'd throw nine pitches against those guys and be done with the, you know, ninth inning. So we just were relentless in our attack and our approach and never gave in. And so it was a team effort as far as kind of him changing his philosophy a little bit. He started not taking that cutter and burying it in so much and tried to backdoor it. And that's where, you know, his accuracy wasn't as good. And that's where some of the cracks start to show up, where he left more pitches out over the plate that he was trying to backdoor that cutter to some of us lefties and left it out over. And those were the ones that, you know, I was very fortunate that I didn't miss, because, you know, he's just a devastating, devastating pitcher and dominant, and, you know, obviously a Hall of Famer. And so, you know, I was just very fortunate and to win it in St. Louis, you know, where I grew up watching. Last time I was at a World Series was 1982 in the nosebleeds with my dad, and game seven when they beat the Brewers, and then to be back there and win it on at Busch Stadium in front of friends and family was a pretty incredible experience.
Yeah, very special, especially back home where it all started, right? Back to Maryland Heights, yeah. Missouri, playing the Cardinals.
Right.
I mean, the full circle. Well, as we finish up here, I want to talk a little bit about your defense. You played in almost 3,000 opportunities at third base, second base, and one game at shortstop, where you had over 3,000 opportunities to catch the ball. You only made 119 errors. You turned 190 double plays. Your fielding percentage was .960, which was pretty damn good. 1,128 games at third, 53 games at second, and like I said, you had one game at shortstop. When you look back at your defense, how much did you work on that in the wintertime, in the offseason, and how much did you work on it daily? Because there's a lot of kids that listen to this show, Bill, and there's a lot of kids that listen to everything these big leaguers talk about and how much work you put into it. Tell them what you did to improve your defense.
There's no secret potion to any of this, you know, hitting-wise and or defense. It's just good old-fashioned hard work and going out there and taking your reps. And I will say, in the Giants organization, one of the guys besides Ron Wotus helping improve my ability to you know, be consistent on a daily basis was Alan Bannister. Alan Bannister was kind of the first guy that helped me as far as understanding the mental reps is just as important as the physical ones, and playing scenarios in your mind about, you know, after you take your 50 ground balls at you, you know, you divide them up to different areas of the field and provide different situations for yourself, or a fast or slow runner, different situations in the game, and put yourself through a little bit of that routine. And that carried on to stay in the big leagues with me, that where, you know, to help with my confidence on a daily basis is taking certain ground balls in certain spots, and so many in those spots, and being able to feel my arm angle and know where the slot was, and being confident that if the ball was hit down the line on the very first hitter, that I could dive and pick it up and know my arm slot and make a very accurate throw over there. But yeah, it's, you know, it's the tired, relentless part of just loving the process, you know, just loving taking ground balls. And I can't describe, like, how many, you know, that would be a personal thing. But, you know, the ability to know that where your strengths and weaknesses are, and always kind of upgrading your weaknesses and keep enhancing your strengths as far as on your defensive side. And so I will tell you a quick story. JT and I were doing like an autograph thing, and I slid up, like, you know, a picture of him over there, and I say, "Man, can you sign this for me?" And he's like, "Yeah, no problem." So, you know, we continued to sign for fans and everything. And, you know, afterwards I'm like, "Man, I'll look at, you know," just getting up, and I see that he signed it. And the best thing ever, he's like, on it, to Bill, JT Snow, And he says, just get it close. Jason's like, God damn. That's all. It's a security blanket, right?
I mean, oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. So, but that's what it takes, too, is it takes a really good first baseman because you're just not going to be perfect and it's damn tough and there's going to be hard plays and sometimes you just got to be an athlete. But if that guy's over there and you got all the confidence in the world that he's going to help you out, it that goes a long way. So thanks, JT Snow.
Well, I'll tell you another one, Bill Miller. I interviewed Kirk Reeder, and he was talking about JT Snow. And JT said, God, he goes, geez, Kirk, you know, you're getting me killed over here of all the ground balls you're making it. And Kirk Reeder said, well, that's why you won all those gold gloves, thanking me. It was just hilarious. You know, but it's true. You know, JT had that flair at him in first base. Well, he did win all those gold gloves. He was just so, you know, consistent, and it didn't matter. It just seemed like he caught everything any which way from any angle, and that's what he made him so special. Is that what you saw in him at first?
Yeah, he was very dynamic, great effort. To this day, one of the best guys that, holding the bag and then coming off the bag, he gained more ground than any first baseman I played with, and just really great effort and athletic and for his size and tremendous, tremendous player, as courageous as you can be over there at first and just soft hands, everything. He was complete. He was a complete defensive player, that's for sure.
Well, as we finish up this interview with you, Bill Miller, it's time to play Who Did You Own and Who Owned You? And I'm going to throw some pitchers out there, and we're going to see if you remember if you hit them well or did they get you. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's start off with the guy that you had the most at-bats with, and that was against Greg Maddux. How did you do against him?
Well, did good.
You did good. 12 for 37, three doubles. You hit 324. Let's stay on the right side. Let's go to John Smoltz. Pretty good pitcher.
Yep, got him.
You did. 10 for 21, two doubles, 476. Let's go with the New York Yankee, Mike Mussina.
Oh, crushed me. He owned me. I think it was 1 for 29. I still dream about it.
Bill, let's try 0 for 23. That surprised me. No hits. You got none.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's go with the big lefty, Randy Johnson.
Oh, crushed me. He dominant. No way.
Six for. But you know what? You didn't strike out against him. Out 6 for 32. You had two doubles off of him. .188. He struck you only out five times. That's when I looked at all your stats, you made contact with everything. I always said you were the best contact hitter. There was nothing that got by you. And mostly all these guys that you didn't hit well, you didn't strike you out. You just got out. You know, which was a big theme here, because when you look at it, it's these are some of the top Hall of Fame pitchers, and some of these guys you owned, and some of them this you didn't get hits. That's about where it ends up. So let's go to a couple more. Let's go to Jose Lima.
Ooh, he was a changeup guy. I'm gonna say he got me.
No, just the opposite. You were 10 for 20, two doubles. You hit 500 off of him. That was good. How about Hernandez? What's
that?
I said LeVon Hernandez. How'd you do big LeVon?
LeVon got me.
Nope. 8 for 16, two doubles, batted 500 off of him. Yeah, good one. How about Kevin Millwood? That's a name from the past.
Yeah, it was a hard heater up. I think he owned me. That was a hard heater up. I couldn't get that one.
He got you. 4 for 23, .74. That's a tough one, though. What about
heater?
How about Tim Hudson?
I think he owned me. He had a good sinker.
He had a real good sinker. Yeah, you got him. You got him out of the home run. 2 for 14, double home run, .43. But still, those are good numbers. Excellent numbers. Yeah. What about John Lieber? Where did you face him at?
Oh, I crushed Liebs.
Where'd you face him at?
He started hitting me. Pittsburgh, Cubs.
Yeah, you got him. You got him real good.
At the end. Yeah,
16 for 36, three doubles, and you took them yard once, 444. Real good there.
he started hitting you.
Yeah. So you had 85 home runs. You had 85 home runs in your career. You hit four home runs off one pitcher. Do you remember who that was?
Milt May or something.
Daryl May. Daryl May. You're six for 12. Listen to this. 6 for 12 off him, Bill. Four home runs and two doubles. So you said, nah, I don't want to do base hits. I'm just going to hit one in a gap or take them yard. two home runs. You had two home runs off Bennis, Stottlemyer, Dijon, Wolf, and Tappany. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, when you start looking at that, I mean, you were definitely not a home run hitter. You hit 292 career hits, 493 RBIs, 11-year career. I mean, as you come to the end of your baseball career, now you're a coach, what made you such a consistent hitter day in and day out?
Blessed with hand-eye, number one. But, again, just always being a student, always trying to – get better, but you know, like I said, the whole part of that is just knowing yourself, knowing who you are, what you do good, always trying to upgrade your weaknesses, and staying inside of what you do well, and just trying to perfect that. Obviously, you're never going to perfect it, but you just try and get as close as possible to it, and that's kind of what I did. I just embraced that part of my game and just try to be consistent for people that they knew what they were going to get on a nightly basis.
Well, as we finish up, Bill, Giants fans will always remember you for your career here. Final thoughts to Giants fans, and how did you feel being a San Francisco Giant for the beginning of your career?
Oh, geez, it was a perfect fit. Yeah, best spot ever. If I wanted, it could change it. You know, you would want to be there your whole entire career, Robbie Thompson style. But how things are in the game and the movement and the business side of things, that sometimes that doesn't work out. But I cherish every minute that I was a Giant and loved every second. So. Awesome.
Well, Bill Miller, forever Giant. Giants fans will always remember you, and I want to thank you for your time today to remember all the things that you did in your baseball career and continued success as the hitting coach of Arizona State University, and hope to see you down the road, Bill.
Thank you, buddy. I look forward to seeing you down the road, buddy.
Excellent. The Bill Miller on Extra Innings, and we'll be right back on KNBR, the sports leader.